Reservations, our discontent with the tone of the past. All of us when we dead one day, history will judge. And we all did many wrong things. Many things which we aren't proud of. But like when Princess Diana died, the media wouldn't publish something like this. Yes, afterwards you would also learn of her frailties and when she made mistakes and so on. But not in an obituary when she died. So, really, I do think there must be some kind of reaction, and maybe a joint reaction from our committees as well. Now, the other, the other issue you raised, wanted to comment on that as well. So anyway, I'll think about it. The whole issue of and the constitutionality of deployment and the whole process which has developed here, what the constitution intended, how did it work out in practice? You will know at the joint committee meeting it was decided that we should also obtain a legal opinion. Mm. I have asked the secretary to obtain such an opinion. But also it would do no harm, and we all want to do add what you said, when you said different political parties represented here, who have also got access to legal experts to obtain an opinion from outside, as exactly what is intended, how does it work in other countries, and how should we try and improve or put right, which is evidently an anomaly working in our country.
Thank you. I read that article on Sunday. In as much as I take my work seriously to go to the department, the council, I must admit, I found it very offensive. And I think I recognize the freedom of the press. I recognize the constitutional right to freedom of expression. In as much as the issues raised in the article can be discussed, can be debated, and as a civil servant, his action could have been questioned, mismanagement, whatever the issues are. But there is a place and time for that. When somebody has left behind a family that's grieving, for them to wake up the next morning and see something like that, quite insensitive, if I want to say. So whoever wrote the article may have had access to whatever information he may have. I don't think that this was an occasion to actually raise it in the session. So it might come as a surprise that this is coming from us, the official opposition. But we are human beings. We must respect other human beings. And there are certain ethics and certain norms and values that we have to adhere to. Otherwise, we are not a country. So I recognize freedom of press, and I think I would support if the committee made a statement. And I would be very happy to say that I feel exactly the same representing my party. We recognize the freedom of the press, we must say so, but we also think that the timing and the place wasn't appropriate to raise these issues. There are issues. We all know they are there. We need to deal with them. that is a time and place where they take things. And with the permission of the second. That is what is. When they make further presentations, I would appreciate if they focus back on issues of, you know, dual use. There were some issues around dual use. I'll go into the research. I'm actually also very concerned emotionally, not in a good frame of mind. I'm not making this up. It's serious. I really feel. You know, as much as we had our own debate with the Honorable Secretary of Defense, but that's work. But there's nothing personal, and therefore I also feel that it wasn't an appropriate time for that article to be created. That's how I feel. Thank you.
It's a very complex thing. Was this an obituary in the true sense of the word? Or was it an editorial? So an editorial is where a newspaper gives its own opinion, and it is not a news item. But normally, an obituary, when you write an obituary, that's why an obituary is written by someone who knows the person well, both the weaknesses of that person. And I think it was not really an obituary in the true sense of the word. Well, I think everybody appreciates the freedom of the press. And there's this whole question of the right. Freedom accommodates both rights and obligations. And democracy is composed of rights and obligations. There's no way that people can talk about rights without talking about obligations. Then democracy then becomes just anarchy, nothing else. I would therefore myself suggest that as against a statement perhaps, a letter should be written. Not confrontationally necessarily, but a letter ought to be written. To this particular newspaper. I think that we would like to know why it was written this way. Maybe just they tell us why this particular obituary was written this way, but I think that they must be told. We as individuals. An individual newspaper. We don't think this is correct. However, I want to say that this is not on the point. The media in this country is eurocentric, and I've said that before. Maybe eurocentric is my colonial. And I don't think that it is in this culture. The culture that it is in is eurocentric. Culture. I think from the eurocentric view of the world, as if it is the world war. So the question of how the Afro-centric view of the world are not really necessary. And yet, we are in Africa, and I think that intelligent culture is the African culture. That is true, which I think is given. I want also to say, Chair, that journalism is not important. Of others. There is what is called journalistic ethics. And there is also what is called journalistic objectivity. So that you are okay. You have my right to say whatever you want to say. make sure that it is accurate, it is natural, it is factual, and also that it is balanced. So then it may be to find the report. So I think these are methods that have been a newspaper, but maybe in general in a statement for all the media in general, a statement and scoops broadly than statement of scoops. But the I think we want to know the deadline for the legal opinion, whether the deadline for which we are going to get the deadline or whether it depends on from whom we get the deadline.
If I may respond to the information that we communicated to them, yes, I the Parliament, we did ask them to ask them to ask them to ask them. So wherever yes, indeed.
But at the same time, I want to say that people who attended the memorial service on Thursday in Tabatswane and the funeral and the other reports in, throughout the country, other newspapers, really reflected truly the history, but also the contribution made by the former Secretary of Defense. And maybe this is the exception to the rule, but repeatedly so. And I would suggest that we keep balance in this matter and keep the respect. And I would align myself maybe because it's isolated to a particular newspaper by a particular report of that newspaper, but also the responsibility and the decision by the newspaper to publish the article in the current form as it was published. That maybe we should consider to write to the particular editor of the newspaper under the name of the chairperson of this committee and especially. I think that will be the correct way to go. Secondly, you mentioned on the defense update that the digital access to this committee. I remember the Minister of Defence in his budget speech in May this year said that the defence budget, the defence update, will be available to this committee and publicly within a month, if not 2 months. And I think as a committee we need to take that up. It was a budget voting parliament, it was our debate, all members participated in the debate. And I think we need, as a committee, we need to take it up. It's a very crucial, important thirdly, you refer to the contribution of this committee to for future SNDF and future Department of Defense. I think we took a step forward by being the first committee, I think, that made a member statement towards the end of August to say that Parliament should seriously review the budget of the Department of Defense, and more particularly the budget allocated to the SNDF. It's an extremely strategic issue, and we made the specific recommendations in that statement, and the minister accepted in his reply. And maybe just to get all members on the same wavelength, maybe we should just circulate that statement to members of the committee, because in his response the minister said Parliament should take that matter forward, which means that the committee has to take it forward, which means we have to deliberate on it. And if there's any change in money bills in future, or whatever the case may be or not, it doesn't matter. It's still the obligation of this committee and the oversight committee of the strategic department to take the matter forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we are clear. And then well, I never said that then. That is a good word. I don't know how many people are fighting with independence as when I say independence. Because I realized that remember the last time we looked into the amendment of the NPHC. Key areas that members were concerned with right now is the reporting. Reporting to Parliament. What is the cabinet issue? We raise an issue on that particular one, which I think we might be very good on, but we need to make sure that according to cabinet. I did say in passing to that as well. One might say maybe with that. But I was then thinking around that particular thing. Yes, we did find a name. But that says that in the ACC we respond to the cabinet and then Parliament and Parliament to the legislative whatever committee. Oh, that thing, by the way, if the NCAC is a subcommittee of cabinet, then I correct it. But constituted by where does it respond? Minister, cabinet parliament. Now the way it was captured. It says cabinet parliament. It does not say parliament. You report to parliament. It says report to cabinet and parliament. parliament then might be very bad. I mean, we're in need of it. I want to hear you. That's why the last time I said we can live with it, but at the same time, looking at it very closely and seeing that it is not a subcommittee at all. For a now it then brings back our own can you talk just a bit about that? Also the last time we spoke about the one area that we did not engage much on, I don't know whether it is from past or past generation, the main thing is about to appoint members of this family. The vetting, of course, we remember some student came up with this. The vetting part, do we have some way of waiting for it to catch up or for those few things that are just raised, yeah, I think I'd like to welcome you in the things that I'm looking at.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the members of the committee. Chairperson, I agree entirely with your summation of issues that we're supposed to speak to. And I'll try to speak to those issues that last week when we were here, we had presented before this committee what we thought were areas of the bill that needed to be improved upon. Mm-hmm. And there were a whole list of them. And we have therefore proposed how to deal with those. And our understanding was that there was general consensus on the approach that we had proposed on those particular issues, save for four items which are both six now. In our understanding, those issues were the following. One of them was the whole issue of the scrutiny committee. To say the scrutiny committee vis-a-vis the provision related to subcommittees, the role of the NCCC, the power that it has, as well as the power that the scrutiny committee has, we have in terms of the proposal. And whilst we're discussing that, I therefore made a proposal that we would request to give it time as the team to go back to our principal, the NCCC, and raise this matter with them. And get our new instructions, as I have said. Mm-hmm. We have since done that, and I will report on what our instructions are on that particular issue. Mm-hmm. And the second issue that was raised was the whole issue of possession. And remember, we are providing an exclusion for companies that will do maintenance, repair, and upgrade. There was therefore an issue raised about us using a terminology there, a duly authorized entity. And therefore we needed to deliberate whether it was the right terminology to use. We would address that. The third issue was the issue that we have raised, Chairperson, related to the report. Particularly the quarterly report, we had proposed last week that we would want to reinstate the current provision of the Act that says we will provide the report of the NCCC to the committee. And therefore there was a debate whether the NCCC can report to cabinet and is it a cabinet committee or a subcommittee and all of that, in the same way that we have perceptions in the future. I would therefore reflect our understanding on those issues. And then the last one, which came via the just correspondence between the secretary of the committee and ourselves about the vetting, and we will reflect on that too. But how we have therefore dealt with the future person is that we have taken the A list, as they call it. I'm advised by our state advisor that this document is called A list. we've taken the A listed and included additional items which are new. But the rest of the items are the ones that we had last week. I would take the committee through those which are additional. And I think there are about three or four, because not too many of them. But as I'm speaking to the issues, I would refer to the A list to say these are the new issues. Chairperson, on the issue of putting a committee, I gone back to the NCECC, had discussions with the chairperson of the NCECC and other members of the NCECC, and they have therefore given us the following instructions, that the committee wishes to withdraw entirely the proposed amendment to recognize the Putin committee. They are of the view that they understand the concern that Parliament has, and they accept that there could be some misinterpretation of the role of the NCECC against the role of the Putin committee. They accept that understanding or that argument, and as such, therefore, they've instructed us to actually withdraw anything related to scrutiny committee insofar as the debate is concerned. And further to that, you recall that last week we attempted to say we'll deal with scrutiny committee at the level of regulation. And as such, therefore, we propose that we amend Section 7.2 of the existing bill, of the existing Act, to remove the requirement that actually says a subcommittee of cabinet, a subcommittee of the NCECC would have one member of the NCECC to sit at. And at the time when we were proposing it, I think the chairperson and other members of the committee said, we are amending a section that has never been implemented. We have never given that particular section a chance, and we are actually premature in wanting to amend that. So all that we are saying, chairperson, is that therefore, the issue of the committee is withdrawn, and the Section 7.2 that we had proposed to be deleted, we would want to reinstate that. We would want to leave the section of the subcommittee, Section 7 of the Act, as is, from beginning to end. That will therefore mean that all subcommittees that are established under the NCECC would have, as a matter of law, would have a member of the NCECC to sit in those committees, as currently is the case. So we are therefore withdrawing that particular issue. So let us say the scrutiny committee will never be recognized legally, both at the level of the Act and at the level of regulation. So Chairperson, I think that is our instruction insofar as that is concerned. We are therefore, as a result of that, sought to remove any reference to the scrutiny committee in the bill. So any reference to scrutiny committee in the bill will be taken out entirely. There won't be any reference moving forward on the issue of scrutiny committee. So, Chair, those are our instructions on the issue of scrutiny committee. I don't know whether you want to talk about that or if you proceed to the next item. And the second issue, Chairperson, is the whole issue of possession. We proposed last week in the A list that we provided, there was an item there called, it was page 4 of the document. I think it's in the new one that we have now. It's on page 4 and paragraph number 4. You will never recall that that entire section which is underlined is a section that is aimed at trying to provide an exemption for companies to be able to conduct what is called repair work, maintenance work, and upgrade work on behalf of registered companies or registered entities, as it were. And if you look at paragraph G, Roman figure 1, towards the end of that, we have said before last week that, can I just read that section so that you can be able to follow? G1 reads as follows. Possession is permitted if such possession is only for purposes of maintenance, repair, or upgrade of control items belonging to a duly registered entity as contemplated in Section 13. As you can see, Chairperson, in the last week's version, We had the wedding to a duly registered, duly authorized entity. And the issue raised by one member of the committee was, what do we mean when you say authorized? So we therefore need to define authorization. We have therefore chairperson decided that the best way to use is actually registered. And we have therefore linked that registration to Section 13 of the Act, because the Section 13 says, any person who deals in conventional arms or possesses conventional arms must be registered. So therefore we are saying, if you are a person who is duly recognized or registered, you must be done so in respect of Section 13. That is all that we're trying to, that there is no doubt and confusion about your registration status. But as we are looking at that, again, there is a word there that says entity. And again, the word entity, it's a matter that we just discussed now in the morning. The word entity, again, can be confusing in certain instances. And what we are proposing at the present moment is to actually substitute the word entity with the word person. The reason for that, Chairperson, is the word person is defined in the Act. And normally in legal terms, if you're talking about a person, there's two aspects to it. There's a juristic person and natural person. A company could be called a person, and an individual could be called a person. But then obviously, people who are possessing conventional arms, they can come into form. Companies possess conventional arms, but there could be a person who is an individual who can possess that. So the word person would be a very appropriate term to use there, because there is already an accepted definition of what a person is in the context of that. So Jefferson, insofar as that issue of a possession is concerned, that is what we are saying there. But the other question raised in respect of this section was, what about defining the word maintenance, repair, and upgrade? Our view at the time, and we continue to be our view, is that the word maintenance, repair, and upgrade are terms that I think the common understanding and definition attached to this term is the similar one that we want to see here. Because we are not introducing a different definition. The normal definition that you can find in the Oxford Dictionary is the same. If you're talking about maintenance, everyone would know that if you're maintaining your car, what is the meaning of that? So I think we attach the same meaning to that. If you're talking about a repair to us, in simple terms, is when you are actually making something work. If it was broken, you repair it to start to work again. That is repair in common language. And upgrade, is actually when you are actually improving or enhancing the functionality of an item. Currently, there is everyone is upgrading cell phones and all of that. You're moving from you're moving to a better one all the time. So those terms, in the context in which they're used here, they assume the normal understanding. So you felt that defining them would not take us anywhere, because the maintenance, the upgrade, and the repair that we talk about here is a similar one that is commonly understood. So we have decided therefore not to provide any definition to it, because it is commonly understood.
I'm told that women
understand whatever the case is. I will therefore proceed to the issue of report, which you have referred to. Last week, in our proposal, we have proposed basically three methods which we thought were central to the consent of the committee. One of them was, we are coming back now to say, because in our proposal, amendment proposal, we are proposing that we report to Parliament once a year on annual basis. And Parliament had expressed a concern about that. And we understood that concern, and we came back and last week and said, we will therefore come back and report to Parliament on quarterly basis or 6 monthly basis, depending on what Parliament would think is the right interval. The second point was the whole issue of reporting on all types of transfers, not only exports. We wanted us to be able to report on contract discussing export, import, conveyance, transit, and all of that. And we have therefore proposed allowance to cater for that. And thirdly, we have come back and also talked about the whole issue of providing details to the country. Because the reports that we're providing over the years have been very limited information and maybe inconsistent with the information that we provide to the UN. And therefore, we've amended the section to actually say we will therefore provide information that speaks to quite a number of sectors, speaks to the country, speaks to a type of an export, talks about the category, and also the description of those items that are being exported or imported or being transferred. So we felt that that would be sufficient to cover the concerns of the country. But then on the issue of reporting quarterly or 6 months, as it may be, the issue that was raised was, do you as an NCEC report to cabinet and to parliament? And our view at the time was that the NCECC would report to cabinet. And more so, because our understanding, in the same way that you look at it, chairperson, is that the NCECC is actually not a subcommittee of cabinet. It's actually a committee comprising of members of cabinet. That does not make it a subcommittee of cabinet. There have been about 12 members of cabinet sitting in the committee. And the other thing is, you never know that cabinet has certain exemptions in terms of how we deal with information, access to information, and all of it. They may be exempted from some of the provisions of law. But the NCECC now comprises of cabinet members. But it's a committee that does what is called an administrative function. And if it does, therefore, administrative function, it is therefore subjected to what we call a law of administrative justice. That's why the issues of promotion of access to information and all of that become applicable to the NCECC, which is not the case with cabinet. You may not call for access to cabinet documents and minutes and things. But people can actually call for information access to the NCECC because it does what is called an administrative function. So that's why in our case, we're saying, therefore, like any committee that does administrative function, it falls under the executive, and the highest structure in the executive is cabinet. So every work that is done, whether it's government department or committee or any other thing, it got to report to the highest structure in the executive. Because in our view, we're saying that when you are reporting to the executive or to cabinet, that is where many of the reports of government go before they actually come to parliament. Reports, they go through a particular government process. Once you exhaust that, therefore you come to parliament. But all that you are saying, Chairperson, I think that is an internal matter of the executive in our view. But I wanted just to clarify the status of the NCECC in relation to it being a subcommittee of cabinet or not. And you're saying it is not, and therefore it has an obligation to make cabinet aware of the work that it does, of all the transfers that it does. But at the same time, it bears the duty and responsibility to come to parliament and provide similar information on transfers. So in our view, therefore, we would want to retain the item that says parliament or NCECC would report to cabinet and also report to parliament. Would retain the chairperson. And if you look at the A list that we provided yesterday, I would draw your attention to page 5 of the document. And there we would look at paragraph 4, and it's 4C. We are proposing last week that the NCECC, amongst other things, it would have to provide a report, quarterly report, to cabinet and a committee determined by parliament. But in our understanding, I think it's a matter that we want again to take here. I think our understanding, and we stand corrected on that, is that last week there was an amazing consensus that in our view, we have to use the word parliament. Whatever committee that parliament determines, I think that should be the function of parliament. Because in the other section, in the same provision, So we therefore want chairperson that we also hear they report to cabinet and parliament. And I think therefore the matter of whether it is committee or the other committee is a matter that we can be advised upon as a matter of practice. But as a matter of law, just say we'll report to parliament on quarterly basis, we'll report to parliament on annual basis. That is basically what we are saying to the person here.
I'm just thinking. We have legal minds here. So report to cabinet and a committee as determined by parliament. Now, the person that determines this is the speaker, I suppose.
Okay, so I'll therefore proceed. The other issue that was therefore raised through correspondence between our offices and the Secretary of the Committee was around the vetting. Chair, our understanding is that of the issue. I would ask my colleague to speak to it, but we want just to frame this understanding or this requirement. That the issue was around the vetting of people who are doing the work of the NCCC. Given the fact that the information that is here is information that is classified, most of it are not. Sensitive information, all of it, and obviously there is a requirement for people who are cutting that information to be duly cared. And I'll ask my colleague, Mr. Jigela, to address that, the issue of vetting and of members of the for people working in the NC to see or around information.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the issue of security requirements for access to state information and government in general within the public service are the minimum information security requirements, which is a cabinet policy document that was adopted in 1992. So that is the overarching policy document. But if again, if you go further to the Defense Act, there is a specific provision which deals with the functions of the Defense Intelligence in as far as vetting members of the Defense and have access to highly classified information. So generally, there is that kind of framework. Again, if you go to intelligence, which again is public service wide, the Protection of Information Act, which is currently under review, and I understand the reason for the money. Bigger chunks of the NIST document, that is the minimum information security standard, are being incorporated in the Protection of Information Bill now, so that it applies as a matter of law and proposed matter of policy. So we believe, Chair, that there is a broader framework that deals with issues of access and vetting of members who have access to this information. So I think they've already done over access, but I think that the committee, again, will have to take a decision if they will want specific requirements that are different from what is applicable to the particular broader public. But there is a framework currently, and the Protection of Information Act is being reviewed specifically to take bigger chunks of the NIST and introduce them in law as a requirement across the public service.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I think the question we have therefore spoken to the four issues, but I'll just refer to you in the answer just to give you the issues in the context of this. I'll just quickly do so. I think on the page one of the document of the A list, updated A list document. On clause one, as you can see over there, I think paragraph number one, I think we've dealt with last week and there was agreement around that. Mm-hmm. But the new one that we are introducing, Chairperson, is that on page four of the bill, we have to take out the entire section R. Section R relates to scrutiny committee. Given the fact that now we are actually taking out scrutiny committee in its entirety, the view therefore is that the reference or the definition of scrutiny committee on page 4 of the bill be taken out because it's no longer of any value. Yeah. The entire R, the R section there would go out because the scrutiny committee is being taken out. And then on clause three Chairperson remains as well, and it's discussed last week. It was just an introduction of the term just to cater for position, and we agreed on that. Chairperson, I think the other one which we omitted in this list is actually clause 4. If you look at page clause 4, Chairperson, is on page 5 of the bill. If you look at 4.3, where it starts with the way the president must designate one member, and continues to read, the president must designate one member of the committee as the chairperson and another as the deputy chairperson, such members being ministers who do not have line function interest in trade in and possession. So I think we've just omitted that. We want to clarify that then, but also include the possession as agreed in the previous meeting. We're just adding the possession there. And the other one, chairperson, on this A list document is on clause 5. We are saying we are taking our scrutiny committee and therefore we are taking that entire section out. We hereby reinforce that statement. As instructed, scrutiny committee is taken out in its entirety. And clause 6, chairperson, on the bill, which is clause 6 is also on page 6. I think that entire section clause 6 was there because we wanted to accommodate the scrutiny committee, as you can see on line 43. But given the fact that now we are taking our scrutiny committee in its entirety, so that entire section is hereby taken out because it was only there just to accommodate scrutiny committee. So that section is therefore taken out of the bill because it's there's no change that is being affected from that. I think on clause 6, paragraph 2, I think we have dealt with that last week. I would request therefore to proceed to page 3 of the A-list document. On the whole of page 3, chapter, we have discussed the issues last week, and I would not therefore repeat them. We have discussed them. And I'll come to page 4 of the document. On page 4 of the document, therefore, I've spoken to the issue on 4G Roman figure 1, where we are talking about the registered person. So we have dealt with that. And I will proceed, therefore, to page 5 of the document. Page 5 of the document, we're looking at paragraph number 4. Paragraph number 4.3, the one about reporting to obviously I've spoken to that we still want to report to cabinet and to parliament. I think we have to be advised by parliament on whether it's a committee or it is a parliament. But also we still want some final determination on the issue of quarterly versus 6 months. But we have expressed ourselves on that issue. And on the very page 5, chapter, paragraph number 5, if you look at page 11 of the bill, line 20, a copy of the report must be tabled in Parliament after the requirements contemplated in subsection 1 have been complied with. We have really looked into that, chairperson. I think the message that we sought to convey there was to say we are referring to section 23.1a, because when a report is being provided to the United Nations, such a report must also be provided to Parliament. So we're just qualifying that so that we don't create confusion. We just say it is that report that relates to the UN that we have to come and actually table before Parliament. So we have just qualified the 1 into a 1A, so that it becomes very specific. We are saying so, chairperson, because the question you may ask is that, why? What about the section B part of it? Where it says, annually from time to time, prepare a report and cause such a report to be submitted to any international body, as may be required. We are saying, chairperson, the nature of, if there is any obligation that arises, out of undertaking by South Africa at an international level, some of those reports are not necessarily, I just report on how we are actually implementing certain things. For instance, one of them, which is, will be a case in point here, we are members of what we call the Bathnal Arrangement Group. That is a group of countries which have strong defense industry bases. All the big countries are there. What actually happens, all countries come together and discuss matters of common interest. On a yearly basis, we have to say to them, how do we implement ourselves? How do we implement our obligations arising out of the Bathnal? And that becomes a very administrative thing to say, as Defense Department or as the NCACC, we have enacted a law to do so. We have done this and that and that. It's not a report that we think that it is of such a significance. But that's why therefore we've qualified, let's say, the ones that go to the UN about transferring in all respects or in the seven categories, we come back to Parliament and say, here is the report. So that could be read in context of the annual report that we provide from time to time. The chapter proceeds to page number 6 of the ABIS document. I think, given the fact that we're taking scrutiny out, on page 11 of the bill, line 36, we omitted to take out scrutiny committee last week, and we hereby take it out now, so that, again, scrutiny committee will bury it once and for all. The last one, Chairperson, is in the long title. The long title is on page 2 of the document. Right at the start of the bill, there is a capital letters bill, and there is a bolded section. But if you look at line number 3 from the bottom, there is reference to scrutiny committee. So we are taking scrutiny out there because it was included because we were starting to legislate for scrutiny committee. But given the fact that we are taking it out, so we hereby delete it from that particular. So, Chairperson, these are the only amendments that we have done in the ages. And I therefore wish to hand over to you. I think in the memorandum, explanation memorandum that we included, I think there was a statement like that. I said that there won't be any implications for if you amend it, there won't be any implications. But I think, Chairperson, I think I said in the previous engagement that the work of the NCACC has increased dramatically in all respects, and as such, the capacity in terms of administration is overstretched. And obviously there are interventions that have been made to try to upscale that. But the point is, whether or not you amend this act, that situation remains the same. I think there was, maybe we did not reflect it properly in the document. We could have done so. But the reality is, if we are legislating for certain functions here, we have to ensure that the National Activities Act is implemented. We have to ensure that surely what are dealt with in a particular way. We have to ensure all these reports have been done in good time and all of it. Obviously, there will be implications for that. And I think maybe the statement in the memorandum was not correct. Let me just say that. Because there will be implications. Maybe we cannot now reflect on the value of that. To say it will be 2 million to 7 million. But the reality is, there will be concomitant implications in the business and capacity and finance of the committee and related structures.
Thank you, Chairperson. I listened very carefully to Mr. Zappa and personally, and I don't feel committed. If God not this what you presented today to us, I would think regarding arms transfers, this is about this law. I would think it's a major defined moment, not only for effective parliamentary oversight, but also for transparency in a democratic society, if we approve of what is just indicated to us. I think we must welcome the not only now the reinstatement of the composition of the subcommittee. That means the act as it stands in 2002 will effectively now be implemented, maybe for the first time or not. Secondly, the reporting to Parliament, both on the frequency as well as all types of transactions, that is transfers, as well as what you said, the third item, providing details to the committee identified by Parliament to be consistent with information given to the UN and Parliament. I think you're welcome. So I'm very happy with the amendment presented to the committee. I think this is what we, from the outset, said that's what we wanted to do, and I think the NCHCC and the department listened to the issues raised by the committee, and I want to go on that. So I'm very happy with it. The only two questions that I have is, on your definition of person in the original, the existing act, whether, I'm not going to read it, but it refers to a 1957 act, whether you are going to, are you satisfied with the definition of person? It says person has a meaning assigned to it in the Interpretation Act 1957, Act Number 33 of 1957, and includes the form of state as defined in the Constitution. So when we amend the word entity, replace the word duly registered entity with a duly registered person, whether you're happy with the definition in the current law. Secondly, and we can deliberate, but I would propose that the report to committees indicated by Parliament must be on a quarterly basis, like we had in the original act. And then my last remark, I think, Chair, what you picked up, I think it's a good amendment. They are good amendments if we agree to this. I think we just need to have a clear understanding with the Secretariat about the capacity. Last week you said to us the structures of the NCACC will be revised. And you said to the Secretariat, you will make sure that the capacity is sufficient within the Secretariat. It's not in the amendment book, but we need to have an understanding. When we approve this amendment book as it stands, there will be a knock-on effect on the capacity. But this will be outside the amendment law. I think in our oversight role, we need to stay very close to the NCACC to make sure this capacity of the Secretariat and the capacity constraints are addressed so that through the revision of structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would also like to commend Mr. Dada for the efficiency and work that he has put in and he's been responding to our request. He's been diligent, I can see he's really trying to work out the things. Having said that, Chair, I have, I'm not sure whether some of these concerns have been addressed. Mr. Dada can shed light if they have, or I might have missed it. And these concerns, I think I raised one of them was regarding disclosure, 23B2, Roman numeral 2. I think I did ask a question the last time that if there is a disclosure, you know, a confidentiality clause in the contract, then you said that this disclosure would be prohibited in terms of the confidentiality clause in the contract of sale. Yeah. I think the question I asked was, will this disclosure, would this apply to Parliament? And I'm not, I think you did say that it might not apply to Parliament, or it would. I don't know what you said. I'd like to just repeat that. How does this affect reporting to Parliament, if A, some company sells something and then it's in the contract with a confidentiality clause, would you be breach? Would you not be in breach of that if you inform Parliament? So please just shed some light on that. And the other one would concern that actually two deals with Section 14, which speaks to the end user certificate. I don't know if you have addressed that concern, and I think this concern was also raised by other parties that made submissions like the ceasefire campaign, etc. If you look at 17.3, it says that the the committee may on such terms and conditions as may be prescribed exempt any exporter from compliance with subsection 1. So there was this concern, and I share that concern with regards to exempting someone in compliance with subsection 1. And what is subsection 1? That whoever is exporting, whatever they are exporting, they must issue an end user certificate, and then there are certain processes in terms of which verification, etc., will happen. Now, the concern is about exemption. Why and what circumstances? And who's going to exempt that? Why should there be an exemption? Is it not then open to abuse, that exemption clause? Has that been addressed in the bill? And the proposed section 17.4, whenever control items and services are imported into the Republic, the competent authority of the South African government may issue an injury undertaking given. Yeah, competent authority of South African government. It's like very open-ended. Wouldn't it be proper to specify who this competent authority is that is responsible for issuing an end user certificate? So yeah, these two issues around the end user certificate, and the other one concerning the disclosure clause, if it's in the contract, how does it get parliament? Thank you, Chair. I would like to see that, show me that it has been addressed in the book. Thank you.
Public submissions. Then we deliberated on two occasions. Now we, for the third time, get together. I need your guidance. We addressed all these issues. We deliberated as a committee. We asked the NCAT for their comments. They came back to us. We responded to that. They're coming out with a second A-list. I just need your guidance. I thought we were looking at the A-list of today, or in September, the resubmitted A-list, and Mr. Bladler has now indicated what changed from last week, because we gave him authority to go back to the NCACC to clarify certain outstanding major issues, and he reported now back to us. What we put now additional, Mr. Shaw, on the table is issues I think we've already deliberated. So I just need your clarity, whether we're going to reopen everything, then we're going to sit today and maybe tomorrow as well, or whether we discuss the four major issues that were outstanding by Mr. Sadler. I need guidance. If we do the four issues, that's fine. If we reopen everything and we go back to last week and the previous week, then let's decide it, and then we go back.
I think for the benefit of the station, because he did indicate that he could have missed time. But I think we've got Mr. Shah some explanation. But on another hand, I'd like to touch on those points. Actually, when you talk about the end user and extension, I think we can't be happy with that. You missed the meeting, yeah. So, just that quickly, if you may. Can I then take
thank you, Chair. I think mine is more or less a question of clarity. This is with regard to report to cabinet by committee, and also we know that there is some input, but the committee also not report to cabinet as well as the parliament. And I'm wondering whether in the context of oversight, the parliament oversight, study before one of these.
Just before the subjecting. I appreciate when you pick up on some other text and the dictation and the demand. But could there be no way of having it captured in such a way that it is sent? We're talking about these people who are going to be understanding. If we are comfortable with the current text that is, then the issue be applicable on the very first, because there are South African directions. Okay. Now, are we then quite comfortable if we don't mention anything within our own reference to such processes that are also contained in other acts, that they must be applicable? In this time, rather than to assume that it will happen because it happened. I'm just engaging you on this one. So that we must be comfortable with that, because there is no place where it talks about the setting of such people with reference to the applicable law, that there is a standard that it must be also applied to such people that are serving in this particular process. Yes, I hear you when you talk about cabinet. You are then saying, but this is not a subcommittee of. But you know that it's dealing with sensitive issues like intelligence. But in the intelligence act, what does he say? What does he say? It is not mentioned in the question of that. I don't have the act before me. Here we are dealing with a very, very similar situation with that of the intelligence when it comes to. So is there no way of finding a way whereby, say, this will also apply as it should apply in the concerning act that you can check? This will have to be then the yes, there is maybe three days of reporting to the cabinet. I'm not sure, I'm becoming a very particular seminar about the role of parliament. Here's a situation where you say, see, in fact, my isolation says the act refers to the Minister of Defense. The Minister of Defense reports to now, here I'm hearing that it must go straight to cabinet. The NCACC must result in an act to cabinet. As an entity. I'm not sure, I want us to look into that so that we find one another. If there are companies of that nature who are reporting directly to cabinet, the department that they should be lying with at once to find that there is such a structure that they have. I'm saying this because our minister was here the other day. And the minister was flexing his muscles. you could hear him flexing his muscles. And say, after all said and done. So he is the minister who must then be, if the president convinced the cabinet, this is to say, report. I'm now imagining here are all the ministers. Then there comes the chairperson of economics. No, not Minister Mufumani. But the chairperson of economics. He said, there, all of them. Together with the minister, also coming to report to come. I'm delivering. I'm
I'm very deliberate on this. Now, cabinet then reports to parliament. It's cabinet that reports to parliament. Now, the committee is going to report to parliament and cabinet. It then says, this is the super committee. I'm deliberate. Now, here is this committee reporting to the cabinet this side and the parliament this side. The cabinet now is being also put oversight over the same committee, and parliament is being oversight over the same committee. But parliament is not a cabinet. Because we are passing. I'm saying because we are going to pass. We are going to pass. Similarly, if not comfortable with the language of the foreigner, where there's this reference to the United Nations reporting and then reporting, so submitting a report that is going to the end to Parliament. Does it go first to the United Nations before? I mean, to our Parliament. Once again, am I. How do we look into that one? If we can also look into that one, I mean, we're trying to trim now the way of reporting. That it goes straight to before coming, you table, because it is wanted by the other country, by the United Nations. It's just by the way to say, Parliament, here is what you have submitted to the United Nations, and Parliament finds that it has to say nothing about it. We then suggest that. Your cabinet report. If Parliament is of the same mind, it's quite upset with the reports that are coming through. We don't have a problem with the reports that are coming through, because at the end of the day, it's what we want. I'm trying to trim it so that everybody must be clear that, because somebody else listening outside, they will simply say, these guys are accounting to the United Nations before accounting to their own country. The quarterly and the half yearly, I think members will talk to that, the half yearly report and all that, will just as well assist, because we know. Whatever is going to be tabled is the full report now that has gone through Parliament and all the systems, the final thing that has been sent there. It has gone through Parliament by way of quarterly half yearly report. Because ultimately, we've consolidated the final report that goes straight to the United Nations. Had it come today, because of this particular process, because the best men before us, they thought it very wisely to them, say, we have to have this quarterly report. Because it speaks Parliament, and we're always, you know, informed about what is happening and what is going to happen in the United
Yeah, reporting to cabinet, the issue that you raised, reporting to cabinet and to parliament. I think if they say that the NC is not a subcommittee of cabinet, is that the understanding? Then who is going to report to parliament? Is it a committee that has really no standing? Because now there is no such thing as a scrutiny committee in terms of an act now. So as far as Parliament is concerned, we shouldn't be dealing with an entity that has no standing in terms of legislation. Then is it not proper that cabinet should be
something that you should align? Yes. It's an entity
that should
talk about. All entities under anybody. So if you read
that
act, it does
the NCACC, okay, in terms of the Defence Act. Okay, but it's not a subcommittee of NCACC.
But it's not a subcommittee of cabinet.
The NCACC
is
subject to
the act.
Okay. So it can report to us in terms of
that.
Okay.
It must.
Alright.
Not can.
Right. So does cabinet also have an obligation?
No, that is one thing that I want to correct. To then say, is it our understanding? Because they maintain that they're reporting to cabinet and parliament. Whereas it is the department ultimately with its own entities, with all the entities that are falling directly under it, that are important too. But the Act also says, because we've been using the existing Act, I've been very mischievous with this one, because we've been accepting the Act as it is, so then we have been reporting to Cabinet and Parliament if they did too.
Cabinet going to report separately?
I think, Jerry, the question is not that Cabinet must report it to Parliament. The committee report. But the question will be, does the report first go to Cabinet and scrutinize and sanitize by Cabinet and then come to Parliament? Or do we have two similar reports, the same report going off to Parliament and to Cabinet, and that we can make our input in an unsanitized report? I think that would be very important. The other point I would like to make is also that actually this committee, Parliament, has the right to more information than is furnished to the United Nations, and could insist, for example, on attendance registers, how often did the committees actually meet, when did they meet, or the subcommittee, this committee which does the scrutinizing and the NCACC. That information has never been forthcoming, and it is made it very difficult for this committee to assess if the work which has been assigned to the NCACC has it been done in the correct way or not. And Parliament is entitled to that information.
I think your question is mainly starting to speak to the heart of this matter. But let me tell you that it is in the form of example. It is just trying to make the public understand where the NCACC comes from and why it got expanded. Because I think that will actually address some of the issues. It happened at some point, before 1994, you had what was called AMCO at the time. And AMCO at the time comprised of the manufacturing function as well as the arms control function. In fact, there were three arms to it. It was AMCO, there was AMCO manufacturing, there was AMCO acquisition, and there was AMCO arms control. Then early in about 1990s or so, then you had the first issue of AMCO getting split. You had manufacturing going to INEC to do manufacturing as a parastatal government. And then AMCO was left with two functions, to serve as a procurement agent of defense equipment and also to do arms control. And then there was an incident that happened which was investigated by Jack Cameron at some point, which came to be known as the Cameron Report, which actually said that one of his recommendations was that when you were to put two functions under one umbrella, you got a problem because you do not have the necessary checks and balances. Because there was a transaction that had happened at the time, which caused a lot of discomfort and which showed that there was no checks and balances. Because AMCO, as it were, could be a player and a rat at the same time, if you want to use that language. And you needed, therefore, to divorce this function, to have arms control as independent, to have acquisition, the role of arms control as independent, and manufacturing as independent. That is why, therefore, there was, therefore, a reason to establish the NCACC, to be independent of arms control, to be independent of FIA, and to be independent of any relevant institution of government that deals with matters of conventional arms. And therefore NCACC was established to actually authorize
concede that a bottle rise can fail or commission up by all sectors, whether public or private. Meaning, whether if armed conduct wants to expose, it has to go through the same system. Whether it's DNR, whether it's SANDF, whether it's a private company, they've got to be authorized at a particular level by an independent agent. One of the conditions of establishing the NCECC was, you must therefore not make a minister who has a line function interest in conventional arms to be the chairperson of arms. That is why the NCECC will never, until you amend this act, will never have the Minister of Defense serving as the chairperson or a deputy chairperson. You will never have maybe the Minister of Police doing the same, or the Minister of Intelligence, because you see, they've got interest in those matters. You always have a Minister of Water Affairs and Tourism and all of that, because they've got no line function interest in that. But the problem at the time was, where do you therefore locate the funding of this new agency? Because it was the whole issue of making a strategic choice to say, all transfers of arms in South Africa have got to have what is called political endorsement, and it should be a political decision. Over and above it being a commercial or whatever decision, but it must be political, and government must take full responsibility for it. But however, at the time, the issue was, do you therefore establish an agency to deal with arms control, or you locate the arms control function within Defense Department for finance purposes and nothing else but that? And that is why, therefore, arms control, the NCECC, was established comprising of means, and the Minister of Defense is a member of that. But the financing of the work of the NCECC comes from Defense. That is why I draw my salary from Defense Department accounts. My staff members do the same. The inspectorate is also employed in terms of defense. But what do? We do work for the MCECC, which is a committee which is supposedly independent of defense department functions, as it were. That is why, therefore, in other countries, it's a way to cut this thing out internationally. Other countries have, because of all these difficulties, there are great agencies that are independent, some kind of parasitical dealing with arms control, with a person who's accountable, who gets instructions from Parliament and all of it, and account to them. Like your arms call, like your whatever. And I'm just saying, in the same format. But I think the issue of maturity and the issue of cooperation, at the time, it was felt that given the fact that arms control was done by arms control, which was in the Defense Department, the environment, and all of it, let it remain there. But at some point, if you look at the documentation that has informed the discussions at the time, one proposal that was there was to say, let the NCECC be established, let it have an independent identity, let it have its own budget coming from whatever, and therefore it can account for its finances and for its business. But that was not to be the case. But at the present moment, the question is, I think to me the text is, Parliament needs to exercise oversight over conventional arms transfer. They need to have reports delivered to Parliament. The issue is the information that comes to Parliament sufficient for Parliament to do its oversight work? And in the amendment that we have put now, in the 8th of last week, and I've reinforced that now, we think that the items that Parliament wants to see, we have indeed tried to put them in. What is left now, if Parliament adopts this particular bill, is actually to oversee the implementation of that. And I think, obviously, that implementation will happen starting from next year, and we hope that we'll be able to deliver on the mandate that is there in terms of quarterly reporting and all of that. But the question that the chairperson is asking is a question that is maybe very elusive. You can't pin it down. He asked the question whether the NCECC is some structure that is here, that's called the Parliament here, the Cabinet here, and it reports both ways. The NCECC remains part of the executive, is not anything outside of the executive. There's a structure there. It's part of the executive, and at the top of the executive is the Cabinet. All the work that is done in administration, and obviously as an administrative functionally, it's supposed to be accountable to cabinet. As the normal, like any other department, it's supposed to be responsible and accountable. And obviously then, the executive will have to account to parliament. That is why the report would have to be made visible to cabinet. And also, after that process, they have to come to parliament, like any other report of any department. I think we follow the same thing. If I were to wear the defense specific hat now, where defense department does have a report, it goes through the minister discusses that in cabinet and therefore it can become to parliament. And we're saying, insofar as the NCECC is concerned, it will follow a similar route. I'm not sure whether the cabinet would want to take out certain information and all of it. I don't think they would want to do so. Because parliament is part of a state, if one were to look into that. Parliament is part of a state. It's a state comprising of judiciary, executive, as well as judiciary, executive, and legislative. And I think, therefore, this is part of a state. And therefore, information generally, that is dealt with by the state. In my humble opinion, is that there shouldn't be restrictions in terms of information there. Maybe if you want to go outside of the state, you may therefore want to impose certain restrictions. But insofar as reports are concerned, we will continue to provide reports to cabinet and also provide a report to parliament. And that does not make the NCECC to become superstructure. It continues to be just an administrative functionary of the executive insofar as arms control is concerned. But we will therefore try to record as robust as possible, starting next year once all these languages are set up. But you know, on the issue of whether we report on the issue of reporting to the United Nations, if United Nations wanted the information, all of it, I think. Earlier this year, Defense Department and Mr. Ngela was in charge of that responsibility. We took an act called the Certain Conventional Response Bill. One of the issues that arose out of that was the whole issue of whether do you report to UN first, back to Parliament, or other way. I was asking to just speak to that. I'm not sure what was the final determination that was made. Because if there was a determination made around that point, you may therefore have to see whether we may not adopt a similar position.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lala is correct that we dealt with the same issue and again, I think the provisions were very much similar, that we will after submitting to the UN, and the issue that was raised by the committee was exactly why report after? Because we need to see it before. And I think ultimately we agreed between the defense and the committee that we will submit the report prior to submitting to the UN. And I think that was the ultimate settlement of the issue. Before it goes anyway, Parliament must have had time. And I think that was the same as ultimately.
You know what?
There's nothing in the exercise for say to say appointments.
I think Mr. Lava already touched on this issue. It may be that perhaps we really trying hard to categorize it somehow. But I think the approach should be really to ask ourselves the question whether the function that the NCACC exercises is a negative function. I think that should be the point of the function. Now one just has to look at section 3 of the actual text and see what are the objects of the committee. And I think we could find guidance. Because it speaks of implementing government policy. It speaks of protecting economic and national security interests. And it speaks of fostering national and international confidence in the procedures of the government. Now, in my view, Chair, it's very clear that those are executive functions. Now, if you look at it again in terms of the Constitution, where the executive authority lies, it lies with the President, which he exercises collectively with his government. Now, that's why you will find specific reference to the President appointing, President designating, and President accepting resignation and all that. So I think if we take it from that point of view, now the question then that you raise, the issue of it being a cabinet committee, again, if you look at the composition, although it says it will be considered of ministers and deputy ministers appointed, but it proceeds. If it go on with that, it's very clear that it was never intended to be exclusively constituted by ministers, because it says in the next paragraph, the President may make such appointments of the members contemplating. The President may appoint such other persons to the committee as the President deems necessary. So it doesn't just say it will be cabinet ministers. It empowers him to appoint cabinet ministers. But it further empowers to appoint such other people to the committee.
But now by the minister, not by the president. In concurrence, the minister may be the correct one appoint persons.
No, I'm just referring to 5B.
5B, okay.
5-1B.
Okay.
In the composition of the organization. But I think then it makes it even more difficult for us to categorize the cabinet committee if you look at it from that point, if people could be appointed who are not necessarily in the cabinet. So, but I think really the criteria that one should adopt is the nature of the function that they are exercising. Is it an executive function? And if it is an executive function, then where is the executive authority of the investment? But then it creates problems if you approach it from your side and say, why then do you insist on the bill in saying that it will report to cabinet if you accept that it's exercising executive function? Because it is cabinet function in any way. Thank you, Chair.
It's interesting enough, the one that I just said is the one now that talks to subcommittees, where now your minister appoints people who are set in the subcommittee. When the president appoints those who are going to serve in the committee, in the broader committee, as we mentioned that everything is being said there, but now go to the subcommittee, there comes another minister who has no interest whatsoever, but appointing people now who must serve, who must not be able to say, the minister is not having any interest, so that's why he must not be there as a minister. Now he appoints people who must serve in the subcommittee.
I would say misappointing the members of the subcommittee comes in because they will have to be paid, and he is the one with the pay. That's why the minister comes.
Let's not take
measures
something that
you are
quite certain about. Can I keep it?
Thank you, Chair. Just on the subcommittee. I see that 7-1 maybe could help us.
Yes.
Is that the committee may establish one or more subcommittees which shall perform such functions as the committee may direct.
Yes.
So the committee will probably direct to the need for subcommittees.
Yes.
But it's not entirely as such up to the minister, in my view, as to where the need would be for subcommittees. So the committee will, in that respect, play a more significant role in the appointment of subcommittee, or the decision to appoint, to have a subcommittee appointed. And then, furthermore, state that a subcommittee must consist of one or more members of the committee. cases between the subcommittees, which and the minister, in terms of three, appoint additional members if we need.
Mr.
Kalko,
can
you
have a question?
Subsection 3. The minister will appoint with the concurrence of the committee, appoint persons who are not in full time employment. So they will need to be paid. Because the funds of the committee are with the minister of the committee. He is the one who has to make the appointment in order to be able to remunerate.
Just to add, I think the issue is responsibility for the outcome of the NCECC work. The person who takes full responsibility for it is the chair of the NCECC. I think we must not create that. If there is a question about a permit to country X or Z or whatever, the person that I come is the chair of the NCECC, not the Minister of Defense. The Minister of Defense, as I said, in our earlier engagement, is being referred to here for purposes of finance only. That's why it's on matters of appointment it comes in there. But those appointments are done with the concurrence of the committee. You recall that the chairperson or the Minister of Defense is a member of the NCC. If you say committee, he is there anyway. He is part of the committee. And once he serves in the committee, he is under the direction of the chairperson. If there is an issue of report that needs to be provided, the chairperson is responsible for providing such reports, not the Minister of Defense. He can provide Defense Department report, not the report of it. As you could see, chairperson, the report that normally should come here should actually be signed off by the chair of the NCECC, not the Minister of Defense. Because if we were to do so, therefore you would be militating against the very same section that says he cannot be a chairperson, he cannot be a deputy chairperson. So in our view, I think these issues can be very sticky. They can be very sticky. But in our view, many a times when there is a minister, he normally has this qualification of with the concurrence of the committee. Because that relates to the implementation of the work of the NCECC, of the committee as it were. But to us, at some point, one year opinion that you obtained on some issue, I can't remember what it was, it defined the NCECC as a committee of its own kind. Use the Latin word sui generis at the time. To say, you can't find a committee similar to this in the country, and it becomes so difficult then to put it in a box, to categorize it, because there is no category where you can put it in, because it's a committee, or it's a committee of its own kind. It's a committee of its own kind, and therefore, it becomes difficult to draw parallels between it and any other committee. But the bottom line is that this committee has got to account. It's got to account to Parliament, it's got to account to Cabinet, because it executes an executive function. The Minister may, in the concurrence of the committee, appoint a person. So you are saying this is appointment. Not the committee concurrently,
but the
minister.
But one may argue that the money doesn't come from the minister, it actually comes from statement. So, like, the one who pays the money calls the shot. That's why I said that it's not his money, so he's going to determine who should be there.
No.
So the whole structure. Now, okay, we're actually questioning the entire. I think we're not going to go anywhere. I'd appreciate getting answers to the question I asked so that I can leave in time for my flight.
No, but there's one point that I should just make. I'm coming to you. That we have to appreciate the circumstances that brought us up.
Yeah, we do.
The exercise that we're doing, we were refining. Not challenging what is currently before us, but then suggest Mr. Jigela that as we move on, these are key areas that we have to. I think our report does
that we spoke about, we are going also to touch on. So then say, you know, there are some clarities that we need, the lines of importance, you know, when and that's when I come the idea that because of this quite complex character relationship, because I can also affect my muscle, because if I can give you money from my own department, you know, I can't do that. Because then I end up like, if I say I don't have the money, because here as parliamentarians, understanding, I guess that the problem is also touching on that. Because this is a big budget, we have to see it working and functioning. We just have to see it. Now we have to go and meet and get them together. Let's say, please, that they do. they do get their money and do their work. But at the end of the day, as I'm bringing this in, we have come up and come, but how do we then begin to shape it so that it must assume a function and a character of its own? Because it's very important. It must assume and take that character of its own. That is why it is a committee of cabinet. You know, all these questions that you are asking me now, we understand, if you have said so, that the funding is coming from the defense. But at the end of the day, the buildings that the act before us also need some kind of tightening here as we move on. But I think, let's agree with each other, that what is before us and attempting to do is to begin to shape this act towards what we are going to accomplish at the end of the day, an effective act in establishing and causing the NCA to function.
If you heard what Mr. Dada said, I tend to go in that direction. I think at some stage, I don't know whether it's proper for us to actually make any recommendations in this regard. I think if it was established on its own with clear guidelines, reporting lines, and structure and budget, I think we would not have had all the complications and problems that we have had in the past. That's my view, and I think that's why they overcompensated with an attempt to establish and to legislate for a scrutiny committee. I think that's exactly what happened. I don't know whether we should seriously consider that, but now we're doing this, but I'm saying for future, as an entity with, you know, proper budget, staff, and, you know, a director in a real sense, you know, whether we can make such a recommendation for the future, I don't know. But I think it would function more efficiently to do it. And that was, obviously, it's not a political direction. Independence, not to the extent that it becomes a god of its own, but I'm sure the legislation could take care of it.
Oh, Dr. Corrigo said, I think there is an issue of saying the definition of the word person. Are we comfortable with the word person as defined, referring to an act of 1967 or so? I think, insofar as we are concerned, our understanding is that that act is still applicable. It still defines the person in a manner that is appropriate for the case, and I think we are generally comfortable with that. So we are happy with that topic. And the other point that you made, which maybe Shepherdson may concern, is the whole issue of reporting. I didn't say he would want the report to the continent, and I think he was very emphatic on that. So we want just some further confirmation on the case. So that means, let me just quickly talk about that.
I think we agreed last two minutes. We think that 30 minutes is even if you just provide us with 3 lines.
Okay.
No, it's a question of simply saying the report that we had. I think you last week you were able also to talk to that cousin.
No, just a conversation.
Yeah,
the other issue that was raised by Mr.
started, if I may come to that, the issue of disclosure, confidentiality, investors' information to Parliament. I think in our analysis, is that the issue, if a contract has got issues of confidentiality clauses, that can't be. I think, firstly, those contracts are subject to scrutiny. And I say, I think people within the state who generally should have access to such information. I said last week or the week before that I think, firstly, contracts that have got confidentiality clauses attached to them are very, I've been in this business now for about 3 years. I still have to see one that has come across with a confidentiality clause. I have not seen one in the 3 years that I've been in this business. So they're just very few if they do arise. But in my view is that when it comes to reporting, when we have to come and report to Parliament, we will therefore say these are all the contracts that have been authorized by the NCAPC. However, contract text will have a limitation or a confidentiality clause insofar as 1 and 2 is concerned. And I think therefore we said last week, and even the minister said a similar thing, that Parliament will therefore determine, together with the NCAPC, the level of information that will therefore be released to the public insofar as that particular contract is concerned. But such information would not be hidden away from Parliament. And I think that is generally the view. We'll come with information and say, these contracts have got clauses of confidentiality, but they are around 1, 2, and 3. We will therefore request that as we deal with issues of releasing the information to the outside, how do we therefore become responsible in dealing with those clauses if they need? So I think Tasha would address your point. But the issue of EUC, Chairperson is right, and Dr. Corino, we have dealt with EUC in the past. And I think what we have said was, this provision relates to exemption where companies are exporting what we call component parts that are going to be integrated into systems. The practice and the experience that we have is that companies export small items, which are so small, can be smaller than this bottle, and they get integrated into big systems, your Corvette, your A400M aircraft, and all of that. But the EUC, as a general rule, says, before you can export that particular item, you need to come back to South Africa and seek consent. We are therefore saying that some other time creates a lot of difficulties for trade and onward export and all of that. We would want therefore a situation where the NCAPC can apply its mind to a request and decide to waive the EUC requirements on that on condition that it looks at certain points. And we are setting the regulations are going to provide a criteria that the NCAPC would follow in actually arriving at an exemption decision. And one of those would be to say, you look at the country where you are exporting to. You look at the end user which is involved. You're looking at the integrity of the armed control system of that country. You're looking at the nature of the equipment that we are exporting and all of that. With the condition that, look, if, for instance, component parts are exported to Germany for integrating to a Corvette, and the Corvette is sold to Pakistan, as an example, that system, as it goes to Pakistan, it will go there, as a general rule, with an EUC. And if you want to trade this item, you go to Germany, and they'll tell you that we had put that in Corvette X, and Corvette X was exported to Pakistan. Here is an EUC for that. Then you can find it there, because arms control, I think, is about creating a trade and responsibility and accountability of items. So we think that for component part purposes, but we're not saying a Roy Park will be exempted. A complete system will be subject to EUC. But for small items, we may therefore consider that.
The concern I'm having, though it may be small component parts, but there are certain small component parts which perform some very critical operation. For example, if somebody manufactures a nuclear warhead or whatever, now that all needs is a little trigger, right? That's a small component. It's a little thing. But look at what the job is performed. So if we're going to say small components, because it's small components, so it could be subject to, it's not open to and if not specified, is it not open to abuse? Or, yeah. Because the person who's going to make that call, who's going to make that call, that this small component can be exempted from the end user requirement. You see, my concern. Small components, small, but there are some small components that actually make missiles work. Realistic missiles, whatever, yeah, makes a constant worry. Little components, triggers in a box, just a little trigger, that's all. Some people can manufacture the big stuff, but they don't have the small stuff to make that work. So that's a very important component. So when you say small component, it still doesn't make me happy.
Well, I think something you just said. The people to exercise the discretion in the NCHC, if you look at the demerit and merit of that particular component part, look at what it's going to be used for, look at the end user who's going to, there will be a particular process that it will not just be exercised indiscriminately. It will be the point that says, look at end user, look at ITM, look at arm control system, look at the possible future sales of that. And on the basis of that, you can therefore exercise that participation. But if you are not satisfied in terms of the criteria, you may not therefore proceed. You will therefore say the requirements of the EUC remain applicable. I think that is how we generally want to deal with it. I must say, Jefferson, this is a matter that if you look at international practice around this matter, if you want to stay in this business, these are some of the things that you've got to be able to contend with. It is part of the defense industry practice, as it were. But it does not derogate the responsibility of accounting. And I think, to us, arms control is at its very bare minimum accountability as a concept. The other point was the issue raised by the Shah about competent authority. I think in the original Act, or Principal Act, we have defined what the competent authority is. So we'll just rely on that. It defines what competent authority is. And therefore, I think that definition remains applicable. It says the minister or the chairperson or the secretariat or the inspectorate. And those are people who are defined within the competent authority status of the Act. The chairperson, I think I had basically dealt with the issue that I have seen.
One issue on section 23A, your annual report submitted to the United Nations in accordance with certain resolution dated 1991. Is there a deadline in the UN resolution, annual deadline, that you have to submit that report on that particular day or month or whatever? Your annual report to the UN, and are you on time for this year, for instance? And secondly, if you say to us there is a deadline, we've just amended now also subsection 2 to say that copy of that report to Parliament referred to in 1A. So that deadline becomes the deadline also for Parliament. It'll be simultaneous. In other words, I just want to make sure my second question, whether when you submit to UN, it will also be submitted to Parliament. Is that the intention? So it's a two-part question. Thank you.
I think, Dr. Gordon, the issue is, normally, I seriously look at that very closely, at the deadline, but normally, these reports are normally done at about July, August. We have just completed in July or so a report that will go via Foreign Affairs to the United Nations. So normally it's around that time, but I'm not sure specifically when the deadline, but it has to go via the Minister of Foreign Affairs. It may be August or so, but we can confirm that. But I think the understanding was that after we have done that, we will cause that report to be delivered to Parliament. And I think therefore, we must therefore comply with that. Even in the new dispensation that we seek to define now, we will therefore ensure that the timeline of the report to UN should immediately after that have a timeline reporting to the public. And I think it's logical that we need to do that.
No,
no.
Right, Dr. You say via
because I think just a quick response to that. I think the current act says that,
yes.
But I'm happy to say, I think we can together expect it on other arrangements, on so far as it has been sustained. And I think if Parliament wants to have such an arrangement, it can just effect their amendment.
Yes, yes.
The report will come to Parliament after which it will be delivered to the United Nations. So that the concerns are actually.
I'm saying this because I said part of the quarterly report and part of the part of quarterly report if you are engaging with it, that is part of it. Part of it. If you get what I'm saying. Now ultimately when you come out with your final report, a consolidated report, there's no reason because there's nothing that has suggested it's coming up with something new. That's when I'm then saying even in the end, just to tone the language. Because it directly says, within part of the process, you've been briefing us accordingly. Now, what you read is as if now it's the United Nations that comes before the country, whereas it's the country that is reporting to the United Nations. It is the country that is reporting to the United Nations. I don't know whether you find the need to find some kind of.
I think that's in the E. I find it wisdom. But I'm just saying, obviously, if just to capture that, we need therefore to look at section 2, 23(2), and actually say a copy of the report must be tabled. A copy of the report must be tabled in Parliament after the requirement contemplated in whatever. We can therefore change that to actually say such a report would be at the same time be provided to Parliament. At the same time as you do to UN, you do to Parliament. I think we can just try to work around the text to be remaining to that.
But now we have to find, enough time. Next week is out, if we can. But that week of the 15th, I'm dealing with all members. It's on the same spectrum. The week of the 15th, we'll find, we are having a lot of activities that are going to take place. If on the Tuesday of the 16th, if you can start by the subclauses and go through it clause by clause, so I would request that the department to get them with the MCACC to have it circulated to all members to inspect it tomorrow so that we can go through it
with you.
And we are ready ourselves for the system where we're going to go through the process that was ahead of us.
I'm wanting us to have enough time when before the 23rd, you know, we normally work at the time to have a good country day, you know, to go to Parliament, and all that. If we are there, then we're not going to go to the with all the amendments that we have. It's a Monday. I'm not sure about the 15th. Let's go through it. I think here, just to facilitate that, we'll never take these aliens, superimpose them on the beam.
Yeah.
And therefore, circulate
the new.
Oh, okay, let me just start. I'm just getting some different. This is just to advise.
Usually, when you finalize data, and then after it's finalized, the doctor goes to the then it will go to the census, and then it will be incorporated. So, the function is not after the doctor. So, can't we just do that exactly?
Let me hit the I think what we're saying here is that what we have agreed on today is what the effect has been into the final class. Right? So that on the 16th, we'll be having now the bill in the actual format. Right? Whereby we'll be able to go through each other.
Okay. The issue of the is not a good really ask for the final draft incorporated, because at the moment you have the bill in front of you, D45. So after the bill is adopted, the ADIS, and the bill is being voted on basically by the committee, then the bill will be incorporated, the change will be incorporated into the B bill. So the committee won't have the B bill incorporated.
No, I know you're going to highlight those, because what you normally do is to come up with the current one. With the amendment, whereby you show them under each event you are changing the student, you highlight those in the particular bill. Whereby when we go through it, clause by clause, this is where we seem to say, agree.
Email or whatever, and we can just make sure that we have an in-between process. I'm just afraid that when you give and submit that 45B bill, and we come on that day on the 16th, and we find something wrong there, then it kickstarts another process, which is uncomfortable.
And
we'll
be communicating with you accordingly, so that when we come up. In fact, I was making it easier because you know when you have what you are amending with the amendment, the original and the amendments that are coming out in the same. It's like that.
Very
good. It does assist the members. Let's say this is what we have. This is what we should be having. It helps us. Then we adopt it. After adoption, then you come up with your final. We definitely
should tell. I think it's important to accommodate the committee as far as that is concerned.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Would
you
have
another
question? I think the committee will check it. I think we'll work on something in a manner that satisfies the requirements of the committee.
and at the same time to ensure that the meeting on the 15th becomes fruitful and make progress. So obviously the text must be up to the required standard. Thank you.
Members,
I think we have done somewhat directly for us to come to some types of things. And that we should be telephone, sorry for this. I know that you've been informed about this venue or you've been running around trying to find the venue. But sorry about that. But it's only now that I realize that he was contributing also as a member of parliament and as not as just as a member of parliament into shaping up the process. We are agreeing with him that we have to look into the structure and how we want it to be for the future. I think we have taken on. We then suggest that when you have seated there, these are some of the issues that you also have to look into. Because it is beginning to assist this particular structure to function as a so this kind of engagement does help a lot. You know, whenever I was telling another committee, where you find that some officials they need to become so because instead of opening up because they think of a happening. We want certain things to happen because we are heading in that direction. You know, dealing with everything together and that, you know, I found it more comfortable. Because the last two bills, you remember when we spoke about the bills, and engaging in this kind of relationship, not shaping it for our own country, not for ourselves, or trying to score and use some kind of foreign to try to put somebody else being clever and the next and all that. Truly and I appreciate your openness, your friendliness. Quite humble. Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Torres was quite saying to me, gave me a call last week. He gave me a call. He does not want to come up, you know, saying, you know, that the challenges that you are facing. Right? He will come, you know, in a partial way to them, you know.
Sure. In a court of law, lawyers are really in Parliament.
Communicate with the person because they have just sent a note to say he would want a meeting
take place tomorrow. It does inconvenience certain of the committee secretary because they have to make an application to finance for such a meeting to take place. We have nothing for that. So I'm then saying that the members of the subcommittee, if the chairperson of the subcommittee can communicate with the subcommittee members, because Mr. Shah is using that the chair is gone, and then we have to indicate that they can bear it and have a date that we can also give them to have. Members, the meeting is that. The lines are going to be